Our next speaker is Dr. Mary Kay Nixon. Dr. Nixon is a child and adolescent psychiatrist and has a mixed community and hospital-based practice in Victoria focusing on early intervention. Dr. Nixon is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UBC and an affiliate associate professor in the Division of Medical Sciences at the University of Victoria here. She holds numerous research grants from a number of very prestigious organizations, the Michael Smith Foundation on health research, the Social Science and Humanities Research Council, and the CIHR. Her current area of research is in non-suicidal self-harm in youth. Dr. Nixon is not a specialist, she made me say this, not a specialist in the treatment of eating disorders, but has a keen interest in both the physical and mental health of youth and concerns regarding the high rates of obesity in Canadians, young and also not so young. Her title of her presentation is Why We Overeat.
Thanks very much. It's really nice to be here tonight, and it's kind of nice to be back with my colleagues from the Island Medical Program, where I used to spend some of my time. So what I'm going to be talking today about is why we eat and why we overeat. I'm going to try to keep it very simple, because I think that always makes things just that much easier. I will try to use my laser pointer here because I do like to talk about the brain. That's a warning. So, why do we eat? Why don't we start with that? Well, it's a response to internal cues. We've already talked about ghrelin. Thank you, Priya, for that. We call that the hunger hormone. Well, it's a very interesting little hormone because it also has effects on the brain. What does it do? One of the things we know is it can activate specialized neurons in one part of the brain called the hypothalamus that is involved in both weight regulation and appetite control. We've already been talking about that. So we also have external cues, and I ran this by my kids at the dinner table the other day, and they said this was a positive, Mom. This one was for my daughter, and I kind of relate to this one too, and wow, I remember those. They're really good. I can even smell it right now. The next one was more for my son, but honestly, I can smell this a little bit too. So there's loads of external cues that we have out there. Plus, we have other conditions, both internal and external, that can contribute to overeating, and that can lead to either retaining or gaining weight. There's a book out called The Hormone Diet by a person by the last name Turner. I thought there were some very interesting things in there because it helps to put the picture together. It's a number of things that we look at, not just one thing. And so these are some of the conditions which have already been discussed. I'm going to kind of focus on things like stress, serotonin dysregulation, and other reasons about why we overeat. We've already talked a little bit about our world today, and I do feel that since the 1970s or so, things have gone kind of crazy in the food department. It's a bit of a food frenzy. There's lots of wonderful things about food. I do love the Food Channel as much as the next person, but there's a lot of stuff out there. It's just too handy, folks, is kind of what I'm thinking. Plus the junk food that's there, even when we just, you know, sort of walking out the counter, paying for our regular stuff. What else is happening in our society? We've got more and more families with working parents or busy parents. We have less time for food preparation. We even have less time for shopping. There's a lot greater variability of prepared foods. And, you know, when I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, I missed the president as much as some other people I know. I don't know if anybody here is from the East Coast, but Loblaws had all these things made by the president that were pre-prepared, and when you had a busy day, I mean, that's what landed on the kitchen table. So we also really, I think, take less time to sit and eat. We have lots of things on the go, lots of distractions, both for ourselves, for our kids, and kids are pretty plugged in these days as well as ourselves. Food is everywhere. As I discussed, and there's some just my examples there, which I won't belabor on, but one of them is really the all-you-can-eat buffet concept here. I lived in France for a couple of years, did a couple of sabbaticals over there, and That is like sort of the antithesis of French culture. For anybody here been to France, done the French thing? Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it? Especially when it comes to food. But you'll never see an all-you-can-eat buffet there if your life depended on it. So our concepts here in North America around food are incredibly different. Although that I know that obesity is not necessarily just a North American problem. But when you go down to, for example, Florida with my family, the portions, you can feed two people on what they give you on one plate down there. And the utensils they serve you are huge. So I had to throw this in, that bigger is not necessarily better. And that there's a glut, basically, of external cues that we have out there that we're dealing with. So from perspective of how to manage our self-control and our impulse, it's challenging. I wanted to refer you guys to this excellent article. Alice Walton is PhD. She is a health journalist and also edits an online thing called The Doctor Is In or something like that. She did a good review of this. So if you want to read more about this, just head to March 2012. On the Atlantic online. Eating is social, and this can affect our habits. Some eat to please. Others are pleased when people eat. I remember going over to my aunt and uncle's. My uncle is from Calabria in Italy. It's like, you want more, don't you? And I've just had the hugest plate of spaghetti, and I'm like literally like this. If he can't, he's not taking the nonverbal cue that I'm full. It's like, you would like more, wouldn't you? And, you know, it just would make him happy, and that's normal. I'm saying nothing against that. The food is amazing. And many times it's cultural, and you don't want to insult anybody by not eating, but also it can become kind of habitual. We also will mimic those habits of the people around us. Typically, this is not conscious, but if you become aware of these things and the tendency that you might have to mirror the behaviors of other people, particularly those you spend the most time with, that's likely going to be helpful. Then there's the age-old one when I have a kid in my office and they said, Dr. Nixon, I get bored. I'm thinking, like, kids, I know, can experience boredom. But boredom is a state of mind. And I know that we all experience that. That is not that uncommon. But sometimes we get into these behavioral habits just simply because we're bored and we're not even noticing it. And the next thing you know, and I can relate to this totally. You know, you got your hand in the peanut little dish there, and the next thing you know, it's just kind of happening. Besides, they're salty too, right? That has something to do. Okay, like this photo? This photo does a lot for me because I can smell the cinnamon coming out of there, and I can feel the gooiness. I just love that texture. I'm relatively new to BC, although it's almost 9 years, and I went skiing in Silver Star, and I remember this little shack halfway up the hill, ravenously hungry. You know that one, Al? OMG, the most amazing, humongous cinnamon buns there. Serotonin overload is all I can say. But it was wonderful. And I mean, I've been skiing all day, so the calories were burning. But watch out, because this is the issue, why we overeat. It can make you feel happy. It can make you feel calm and relaxed. We do know that these carbohydrates enhance levels of serotonin in our brains. This is exactly what antidepressants do as well, and those particular medications that we prescribe when necessary in people who suffer from significant mood problems. We also know that fatty acids are found in comfort foods, and they can have mood-boosting effects as well. So food is good. In fact, food, for some people, is like really good. So then if you get that in combination with a bunch of other things, and one of them could be stress, because sometimes we overeat due to stress. I am not going to get into the details of this little photo here because we have our hormone specialist here, Priya, who just gave the most wonderful talk. But basically, stress can increase in some people, not everybody, but in some people, the perception of hunger by this particular axis we call the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is between the brain and those little glands that sit on top of your kidneys, called the adrenal glands, that shoot out something called cortisol. Okay? Cortisol can be good, but cortisol can also be really bad, especially when it's out there in a chronic, under chronic kind of conditions. Okay? So remember ghrelin, the hunger hormone? Well, it also does something else with our brains. It can activate something called the mesolimbic dopamine reward circuit, which is implicated in a lot of reinforcing, and not necessarily bad behaviors, but definitely reinforcing behaviors, shall we say. Okay, so I'm going to keep going here. Here's my lovely photo of the brain. You like that? I love it. Why do I like it? Because it's just a great cross-sectional view of the brain. Okay, so a little bit of brain anatomy. Ventral tegmental area, more in what we call the midbrain section of the brain. This is the reptilian brain, folks. Okay, here's our hippocampus, very implicated in memory. Here's our amygdala, has to do with our emotions. So when you're talking to somebody the next day, you can say, how's your amygdala doing today? And they'll say, what? And I personally think we should know a lot more about our amygdalas. Here is the nucleus accumbens, very, very rich in a molecule we call dopamine, okay? Here is the dopamine reward circuitry, this blue line here from the nucleus accumbens down the medial forebrain bundle into the ventral tegmental area and then somewhat into the hippocampus, but also look way out to something we call the prefrontal cortex. That's that huge, wonderful piece right across our forehead here that frankly makes us human, okay? Highly, highly, highly developed. It's basically why we have to nurture our babies for so long. Mine are 20 and 23. I hope they're not here. Anyways, the dorsal prefrontal cortex is something I'm going to be talking to you guys about because that has to do with something fancy we call executive function, okay? So there we are in that little bit of brain anatomy. Great. So neurobiology, there's your mini lesson. We all have it, and everyone is different, okay? That's an important message that, if there's any one take-home message, I'd like to give that to you guys today, okay? We are not all the same box, okay? Our brains are all very different, okay? Food is a reward. It's pleasurable, and it also is something that causes us to have a motivational drive to obtain and consume. That's a pretty innate response, and that has to do with that dopamine reward circuitry that I was just showing you in blue. We also know that the prefrontal cortex that I was talking to you about, that big part of our forehead, has to do with planning, delaying gratification, things like that. And it's involved in suppressing urges. So there's that cinnamon bun, but no, I have not been skiing all day, okay? Then there's also the issue of time discounting and how our brains function and make decisions. So as the author of this study, or one of them commented on, there's a study in the American Journal of Dietetics back in 2001 that basically said that you have to look at this neurobiology to really look at how change and managing your nutritional plan or your fitness plan is actually going to work. So basically, in terms of the managing the food part, they use the sort of comparison of that most of us will take $200 now instead of waiting a year to get $300, i.e., geez, you know, there's that little dish of peanuts and then that bag of chips and there's that really great spaghetti meal I want to have, and I'd rather have that now than worry about the 10 pounds or 20 pounds I need to lose in 6 months. Okay, I'm rolling, folks, because I got 2 minutes left. So what can you do? Well, there is plenty. One small step at a time. Important to recognize both your internal and external cues. Understand, know where your urges to eat are coming from. Be conscious. Be mindful. There's a lot out there now that we're doing about mindfulness and mindfulness meditation. Very, very, very interesting stuff to do with noticing the taste, the textures, the smell, every little bite. Identify and manage and treat any stressors, anxiety, any mood issues related to your eating, or boredom for that matter. We use a technique called cognitive behavioral therapy for a number of things, including the treatment of anxiety and depression. In this case, there's some opportunities to use it here to challenge some of the stress-related thoughts, mood-related thoughts, food-related thoughts, and replace them with more realistic thoughts, which can then change your behavioral response, which means instead of going to the fridge, you put your shoes on, walk out the front door, and you'll make sure you don't take your wallet with you because you don't want to stop at Starbucks. Okay, so there's nothing wrong with change if it's in the right direction. Anybody know who did that quote? Winston Churchill. That one surprised me. He's got a lot of really good quotes, that guy. Okay, if you're in or out of crisis, what factors underlie motivation to change or cope? This is one of the gurus on emotional social intelligence, okay? So just as a take-home message, because I am not going to be able to go over all of this with the 2 minutes I have left. The fellow's name is Reuven Baron, and he talks about 5 metafactors. It's a concept around what aspects contribute to social emotional intelligence. And basically, there are 5 factors, basically to do with your own self-awareness and how you express yourself. Those are more intrapersonal things. Interpersonal things are how you relate to others, what kind of social responsibility you might appreciate and undertake, the quality and manner of your interpersonal relationships, how you manage stress, as I've been talking about, which is both to do with tolerance to stress as well as control of impulses, how adaptable one is, and generally how satisfied and self-motivated one is, which has to do with both a combination of optimism and happiness. I'm going to finish off my talk by talking a little bit of therapy. And the medical students who are here may know about this, because I remember when I was DPAS course director, we talked about this in our addictions seminars. And it's for those, and I think, you know, if you're working with someone or you have a loved one who's thinking about making change, I would say, firstly, you know, it's important to understand all the points that I've just talked about. But everybody is at various stages in terms of their own thoughts and their desire and their understanding of change. And the earliest phase is really the pre-contemplative phase. So there are some main principles that we like to address when we've got somebody in our office. And in my case, it would be, for example, a youth who is significantly abusing marijuana, for example, and it's affecting severely their mood state, for example, and probably other things as well, like their academic performance. So it's very important that you may need to make a connection. You need to be able to listen in a reflective manner, and in that way you're expressing empathy towards them. You're mirroring back their experiences, and the point is to try to increase their awareness of their need for change. The next point is important because I think what you try to do gently is to develop discrepancy. You focus on specific types of questions and you use selective reflections and you focus on the difference between their present behavior and what their broader personal goals or values are. You don't smack them in the face, you're not taking the front door, you're just gently kind of probing. It's a bit of a reflection back, but it's very selective for certain aspects of what they're discussing because they wouldn't be there and willing to talk with you if at some level they weren't willing to consider this. And the last 2 points are key, which I think are both very straightforward. It's not worth getting in an argument. And yeah, there's going to be resistance, and yes, you got to roll with it. So I wanted to thank you guys very much for your attention and look forward to the discussion in the panel.